much for joining us today on the Power Hour Radio Show. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is a powerful radio show, and it's more powerful because of the things that you do. We're going to change the subject right now because we're going to talk to a former guest or a guest who has been on the program before, Thomas Greco. He has written a book called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. Now, this is a book that I think is sort of, unfortunately, not the end of the world. It's going to be the end of the system as we know it. And he has a positive solution. He believes that there is something else that we can do, and that is commercial trade exchanges. In the hour after this, we're going to be talking about bartering. Now, this is an important subject because we're going to be dealing with this, well, sooner or later. And Thomas Greco is going to sort of lead us into that with our guest in the next hour. Thank you, Thomas, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Good morning, Joyce. Nice to be back.
Well, you inspired us an awful lot with the idea that bartering is a step into the future. So if you will, let's just sort of, for the people that didn't hear your first interview, first of all, the end of money, and why do you say that?
Well, let me clarify one point about barter before we start. What we're talking about is really not barter. You know, we have so-called barter exchanges, but what they do is mutual credit clearing. It's not a process of one-to-one. I give you something you want, you give me something I want. What it is an organized system whereby we have a third-party record keeper that keeps track of the transactions among a group of participants. So when you sell something, your account gets credited. When you buy something, your account gets debited. It's as simple as that. And there is no money involved, really. We're just keeping track of the value of the things sold and the things bought. So this, even though it may be called barter, it isn't barter. It's what we call a trade exchange.
Okay, let me ask you, you've got a really bad connection right now. Why don't you hang up, let John call you back, and let's see if we can get a better transmission there because we've got some problems there. So go ahead and hang up the phone, and unfortunately we have to do this right now, but go ahead, hang up the phone. John will call you back, okay? All right, ladies and gentlemen, now he's talking about commercial trade exchanges, bartering, but you and I both know there are other types of bartering and exchanges that are going on. There are other types of bartering, and that is that when you go to the feed store, you give them so much grain, you give them so much of whatever you have in return for what they want to give you or what you want to get from them. Now, so I think we need to clarify this with the different types of bartering that are going on in this country. I know they're going on because I've done it myself. And I know that that is a form or a system that people may be going to very shortly. And that is if the financial structure of this country collapses entirely and we don't have an ability to go to the store and get what we need. John, do we have Thomas back yet? We don't have him back yet. Okay, we're waiting to get a good line for him. It's so sad right now to think that we have to cover these stories. It's so sad. We go from one sad story to the next. Though we're looking at the positive side of it, and we're trying to find the action side of it, just like with Matt Letterman, we're trying to find the answers. We're trying to find what is going to work, if you will, for someone like him. But still, we have to cover challenge after challenge, and they are challenges. But, you know, that's what we're made for. That's the time that we are in. We're all here for a reason, and we have our purpose, we have our role, and like Matt Letterman says, I have my mission. So that's what it's all about, is finding the answer. And hopefully when we come on the other side of all of this, it's going to be a whole lot better than this corrupt mess that we're living in right now. The corrupt mess is the financial system, and it's those in Washington that have gotten control of the money and the access to, access to literally to all of what we have also, which is unfortunate. Thomas, do we have you back?
I'm here.
Okay, much better, much better.
Good.
Now, while we were getting you back, I was clarifying between the commercial trade bartering and commercial credit bartering that you were talking about, with what goes on, which I know goes on right here locally, which is bartering between farmer and purchaser, between whomever, veterinarian who needs something that somebody else needs, and he provides service. There's different types of bartering that exist. Now, let's talk about the farmer-to-farmer bartering or the farmer-to-consumer bartering.
Well, that's certainly a possibility, and it happens all the time, but it's a rather inefficient means of exchange. What we're talking about is reciprocal exchange. That's what the purpose of money is to facilitate reciprocal exchange. That is for players in the economy to put in as much as they take out. And a money system is supposed to assure that. Unfortunately, the money system we have does not do that. But sure, there's plenty of one-to-one barter that goes on. But that depends on a coincidence of wants and needs. If you and I are going to engage in a barter trade, you have to have something I want, I have to have something you want.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of us has nothing the other wants, then there can be no barter trade.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we bring in a whole circle of people or participants in the economy who participate in a credit clearing process, then you can get what you want from me, and I can get what I want from somebody else in the system because I have the credits to draw upon in that system. And over time and space, it works out so that everybody's account will fluctuate around zero. Sometimes your account will be in the positive, sometimes it will be the negative. And that's fine because it's that credit, it's that collective credit that we're using as the exchange medium.
Okay, you talk about this sweeping change in the view of money and this plan to democratize the economy and restore the credit commons. What do you mean by the credit commons?
The credit commons is the credit that we give to one another, and that's the whole foundation of any monetary system, including the dominant monetary system that we've been using. The credit commons basically is all of the credit that we give to one another in the process of trading. Now, unfortunately, we've allowed the credit commons to be privatized by a banking cartel. So, effectively, we give our credit to the banks, and then we beg them to lend some of it back to us at interest. So, what we can do is to exercise our credit locally. We can decide who we want to give credit to. That is, who will we trust to pay us later on. And the way we do that is through this credit clearing process that I described.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, going back to the previous statement or the previous title of, or the title of your book, The End of Money. For those that did not join you the last time or did not hear you the last time on the program, why and how do you, for what reason do you state that there's going to be the end of money?
When I talk about the end of money, I'm talking about two things. I'm talking about the evolution of money to a new stage. We've had the evolution of money over a period of 300 years, initially with commodities being used as a medium of exchange, and then with commodities being deposited in banks, like gold and silver being deposited in banks, and then the banks issuing banknotes, which were simply receipts or warehouse receipts for the gold and silver on deposit. And then the banks started to create credit money, that is, they created banknotes on the basis of not only gold on deposit in the bank, but also on the basis of other collateral assets, which they took as security against loans. So these loans were created in the form of banknotes, and the banks then invented what we're calling credit money. So now all we have is credit money. Gold and silver have long since gone out of the picture as far as money is concerned. We have no gold and silver in our money system. It's completely a credit system. And when the banks make a loan, they're creating money. People have a hard time grasping that concept because it's so simple. You know, as renowned economist John Kenneth Galbraith once said, the process by which banks create money is so simple that the mind is repelled. And indeed, I find that's true. When I talk about this to people and I tell them that this is the way money is created, they just can't believe it.
That's right. And we're going to talk more about how money is created. Wow. After this 4-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. Our guest today is Thomas Greco. The book is The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. We'll be right back. Ronnie, thank you for joining us today. Our subject is the end of money. Yeah, fiat money. I know people get tired sometimes of hearing about the fiat money system, but you know what? It's something we have to continue to talk about because we've got to get the world to understand money is not what you think it is. And that green thing you have in your wallet is not real money. Joining us today is Thomas Greco, Jr. The book is called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. You can go to Amazon.com to get the book, or how would you recommend that people get the book, Thomas?
Well, they can order it through their local bookstore, or they can go to the Chelsea Green Publishing website and order it that way, or they can order it through Amazon.com, as you said.
Okay. Now, we were talking about the fiat money system. Money is not what we think it is it? Now, if you know, I would like for you, since you know so much about it, have studied this subject so much, to give us a little bit about your background, and then to tell us, in your words, as simply as possible, if I were talking to a guy on the street, how would I explain that money is not what they think it is? Money is not really money or what they think it is. First of all, your background, Thomas.
Okay, well, I started out, my first career was as an engineer in the aerospace industry. I did that for 5 years and then went to graduate school in business administration. And then I entered academia and I taught subjects in business administration for 14 years. In 1979, I left that career behind and became an independent scholar, researcher, and activist and consultant. And that's what I've been doing ever since. I got really involved in investigating the money and banking system around that time. And one thing leads to another, and eventually I've written 4 books on the subject. This End of Money and the Future of Civilization is my 4th book. The first one was called Money and Debt, A Solution to the Global Crisis, and that was published 20 years ago in 1989.
So this is a subject you've been following for a long time. So you can help us understand how we tell somebody on the street, you know, the guy with a remote control in one hand most of the time and a beer in the other. I mean, how do we explain to this person money is not what you think it is?
The way I do it is to ask them to take a look at the money in their pocket. These are typically Federal Reserve notes, and when you look at the Federal Reserve note, what does it say? It says Federal Reserve note right at the top. That means it's an obligation, a credit obligation of the Federal Reserve Bank. And on the reverse side, no, it's on the front, actually. Over on the left side, it says, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. Now, that's one of the major problems. This money has been given legal tender status, which means that you must accept it in payment for a debt that I owe you. And since it's a credit instrument of the Federal Reserve Bank, it really doesn't matter how badly the Federal Reserve Bank abuses this currency by improperly issuing it, you still have to accept it legally in payment for debts. So that's why we've had increasing price levels over the years since we've had the central banking system, because we've obliterated the value standard that we used to measure the value of everything else. You know, when the dollar was first defined at the beginning of the United States, right after the Constitution was ratified, the dollar was defined as a specified weight of silver. And so everything was measured in terms of silver. A dollar was said to be 371 1/4 grains of fine silver. And there were silver dollars that were minted to that specification. Now, when banks issued notes, and in those days, each individual bank issued its own notes, which were their own credit obligations, those bank notes were denominated in dollars, which meant they were denominated in some silver value units.
You know, after this 3-minute break, I want to ask you what the definition of a note is, because Bill Malden told us yesterday he's been researching for 20 years to find out the definition of note, and perhaps our expert knows it today, Thomas Greco Jr. We'll be right back after this 3-minute break. This is Joyce. The Power Hour. Thank you for joining us in the Power Hour today, and thank you for supporting the Power Hour. Our guest today is Thomas Greco Jr. He is a former college professor, and his interest is in the end of money, the future of civilization. Thomas Greco Jr. has been studying this for many, many years. He has written, as he said, this is his fourth book. Now, as we were going to the break, I asked him about the definition of a note, because Bill Malden, who is our researcher on the Power Hour, has said that he has spent 20 years trying to find the legal definition of a note and cannot find it. So let me ask you, Thomas Greco, have you found a definition for the word note?
Well, the note is it's a common terminology in finance. I don't know what the legal definition might be. I'm not a legal scholar. But commonly, a bank note, which is what we're talking about, is a promise to pay. So originally, when banks issued notes, they were promising to pay so many dollars. And in those days, the dollars were actually silver or gold coins. So a bank note was redeemable for the metal that was on deposit. But as I said, when banks invented credit money, we went to a fractional reserve system, which meant that some of the money in circulation was warehouse receipts for gold and silver on deposit, and some of the money was issued on the basis of other kinds of financial assets, like your mortgage on your house. So the bank was creating both symbolic money, redeemable for gold and silver, and credit money, supposedly backed up by sound collateral. But there was no distinction made between these notes. They were all identical to one another. So the fractional reserve system actually set the scene for a lot of trouble with bank runs and bank panics. But to get back to the definition, a bank note is a promise to pay. So what
but
we have...
I just wanted to add that I think it's interesting, though, that you would think it would be in Black's Law Dictionary, but he has tried to find it. He's not a legal scholar either, well, other than self-taught. But he said that it's just so amazing, though, that nowhere is there the definition in any of the legal books on the word note, and they define everything. So I just find that strange.
It is strange. There must be a definition somewhere, because this banknotes have a long history of use in finance and money. But
the other thing,
to,
and your phone line is cutting up so badly, out so badly. I don't know if we're going to be able to keep you on. I'm going to try a little bit more, but I think I'll open up the phone line. If you would like to ask Thomas Greco a question, because we haven't even gotten into bartering, the subject of really of commercial credit and bartering, but the phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we will be talking to our guest in the next hour, Annette Riggs, who will be discussing the community aspect of bartering. And you can see the website by going, and you can also see Thomas Greco's website. Go to today's guest and click on that, reinventingmoney.com, reinventingmoney.com, and beyondmoney.com.
.net.
.net. I am so sorry. Beyondmoney.net. Now, the question over bartering and how is this, you see that the financial system is going to collapse, or has it already collapsed?
Well, it depends on how you define collapse. It's certainly malfunctioning, and the system is breaking down. You know, back in September, the Fed and the government were scrambling to try to keep the system from totally collapsing. And the way they did that was by further centralization. They got Bank of America to take over Merrill Lynch, and they made choices about which financial firms were going to be allowed to fail and which ones are going to be taken over. But the Fed has really been doing a dance over the last several months, trying to provide additional liquidity, basically buying up the bad debts of the private banks as a way of keeping them in business. So the private debts that the banking system created that were just unbearable for the population to carry are now being taken over by the public sector, the government. And that's the nature of our monetary system, you know, because compound interest is built into the system. There is this debt growth imperative, which forces everything else in the economy to grow exponentially over time. And this, of course, cannot continue. It has to either level off or we're going to see a catastrophic collapse. The question is, how long can the government keep this system in operation?
That's right.
And that's a tough one to answer.
Well, there's been a lot of talk recently about a bank holiday. And now in conjunction with what you're talking about, the end of money, do you see that as being a possibility?
It's a distinct possibility. We saw that during the Great Depression when Roosevelt came into office in 1933. One of the first things he did was to close the banks, the famous bank holiday. And many of those banks never opened up again, and people who had deposits at those banks lost their money. Many other banks were taken over by larger banks. But, you know, historically we can see that every time we have some kind of a financial crisis, we end up with banking consolidation, further banking consolidation. You have fewer banks coming out of it than you had going into it. So now
we have these
huge bank holding companies that are basically taking over the whole process of money, banking, and finance.
And we have that problem right now with the banks failing. I don't know how much longer the FDIC can come in and assume the responsibility.
That's provided by the FDIC is minuscule in comparison to the amount of debt that's being created.
That is so sad. The people will suffer. Let's go to Joe in Arkansas. Joe, you're on the air with our guest today, Thomas Greco, Jr. Go ahead, please, Joe.
Okay, thank you, Joyce. Yeah, my question is this. The old silver certificates, I remember, said on them, you know, this signifies that there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States $1 in silver payable to the bearer on demand. Now, if the Federal Reserve note was to say honestly, on its face, what it's all about, would it not say something like, this signifies that the people of the United States of America owe $1 plus interest worth of labor and property to the Federal Reserve Bank?
Well, it's actually an obligation of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve note is a credit instrument of the Federal Reserve Bank. But because the Federal Reserve Bank is supported by the government, ultimately it's the taxpayers that support the currency. It's everybody who participates in the economy because you have to accept that in payment for debts. So whatever it is you're selling, you're obliged to accept Federal Reserve notes in payment for it. So this massive debt that we have run up with the rest of the world, you know, China holds somewhere around $800 billion worth of U.S. government debt, and their dollar-denominated assets are even larger than that. So the Chinese, we owe the Chinese a tremendous amount of value. And if the Chinese were to suddenly dump all those dollars back in the economy, buying up everything here left and right, what do you think that would do to the value of the dollar?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you very much, Joe from Arkansas, for the phone call. Let's go to Howard in Kansas. Howard, you're on the air with Thomas Greco, Jr. Go ahead, please.
Hello, everyone. A successful economic system, or people that are happy in the monetary system. It's going to have to be built on a foundation of good social skills. And the brutal fact of the matter is that much of the time, it seems our public school education could not have done a worse job if they have tried. A few numbers, 500,000 sexually molested children, 4,000 spouses beaten to death, balls of steel between neighbors, and the list goes on and on. What do you see, what would it take to make a revolution in the public school system? How do you see this nut being cracked? It seems too left-wing, too radical, and I think you get the drift of my question, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
I do. In my book, I talk about the mega crisis, and it seems like we are in an unprecedented situation today in the world with a mega crisis. We have a number of things that are happening. All of our institutions seem to be failing. Our schools fail to educate. Our healthcare system fails to provide health. Our government fails to keep us safe. Everything that we've done seems to be crumbling. And I think the problem is that we have overly centralized power and also wealth, and we've created things on too large a scale. The only way you can have meaningful interpersonal relationships is in small groups and on the local level. And we've allowed power to migrate upwards to the center, to Washington and the federal government, and communities have been disempowered, states have been disempowered, individuals have been disempowered. So the way out of that is for us to take responsibility. You know, nobody gives you power in this world. You have to assert your own power. And you don't do that by fighting with anyone. You do it by taking care of yourself. And that's what I think is happening now. We're seeing communities organizing themselves all over the place. There's a movement called the Transition Towns Movement that originated in England. And there are many communities around the United States that are organizing sustainability groups. Here in Tucson, we have one. It's called Sustainable Tucson. And it's a grassroots movement. It's a number of people who have come together and are coming together to solve our own problems locally by organizing ourselves and educating ourselves.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you, Howard, from Kansas. Frank, in New York, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Regarding the future of banking and currency, I was wondering if your guest has heard anything about SD Rockefeller Holdings Limited, the firm founded by young Supreme Rockefeller down in Arkansas that has all of the patented digital technology related to a digital currency for countries and for individuals. That in a sense will revolutionize banking. And I was wondering if you've heard of his company, the Bank and Trust Company.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, because as of 2 years ago, he managed about $8 trillion worth of private funds.
That's a huge amount.
Thank you.
Wow, yeah, thank you very much for the phone call. Let's go to David in Vermont. David, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I have the Black's Law Dictionary definition for a note.
Really?
Yes.
And which edition is that?
This would be the fourth edition.
Okay.
I have the fifth edition also, but I'll read you the fourth edition. The definition for a note is a unilateral instrument containing an express and absolute promise of signer to pay a specific person or order or bearer a definite sum of money at a specific time. Now, the Federal Reserve note can't be a note because it doesn't have an absolute promise to pay, and it doesn't say a definite sum of money either because it's not money, and you can't redeem it for gold or silver. So I don't see how it could possibly be a note.
Interesting. Let me ask our guest. Do you think, from what he is saying there, Thomas, that it meets the definition or the standard of note?
Well, he has a point. Many people have argued that Federal Reserve notes and dollar deposits are really legalized counterfeit, and that's not far from the truth.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for the phone call. I appreciate you doing the good homework there. Now, is the fifth edition the same, David, as the fourth edition?
Yes.
I guess he's already gone. All right. I appreciate so much when we've got researchers like David in Vermont and people who can jump to it and find the answers for us. I'll tell you, we have got some of the sharpest callers in the world. I mean, I've got to even ask you, Mr. Greco, don't you find that the callers that call into this program are far and above the average callers to radio shows?
I do indeed, Joyce. That was an excellent call, and that was an excellent bit of information. Many talk shows, you just hear people ranting and not providing much light on the subject, but your show seems to be quite different.
Well, it's not my show. It's the listeners that gravitate toward the truth, because we're not interested in anybody's opinion here. We're interested in what we can prove and what we can show.
Right.
And they are just amazing. They are amazing. They teach us an awful lot, and it's because of this aggregate of information that we're able to do what we do. Now let's move to barter, because I want to get to this before we have our guest on, and you can tell us a little bit about our guest, Annette Riggs, that will be coming on in the next hour. But talk to us more about, well, we've got a break that we've got to go to right now. Then when we come back, I want you to give us a little preview on the subject of bartering and how it might work from a commercial standpoint. I think this is just absolutely fascinating. And the last time that you were a guest on our program, people were just, please, have him back. So I thank you for joining us again. We're going to be right back after this three-minute break. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us on the Power Hour today, and thank you for searching and looking for the truth. You know, I was reading a scripture last night, I think in Psalm 119, and it talks about the search for the truth. And you know, once you search for that, nothing else will do. We can't go back. And I thank you all for joining us in the Power Hour today. All right, we're talking to our guest today, Thomas Greco Jr., about bartering. And we've got a bunch of callers that want to talk to you. The book, though, is The End of Money and the Future of Civilization, which he does an excellent job of describing the exchange system and what would return us to a role of financial stability in this country. The exchange, finance, and store of value. This is quite complex, and I know we haven't even dealt with it, but this is a whole business in and of itself. But how can you possibly, in just a few minutes, help us understand this?
About 40 years ago, some entrepreneurs started these exchange circles to provide business-to-business trading without the use of cash. This was a continuation of a process of credit clearing. And the last time I was on, I mentioned the Vir Business Circle Cooperative in Switzerland. That's WIR. Mm-hmm. And that was started during the Great Depression when there wasn't enough Swiss francs in circulation. So the small and medium-sized businesses got together and they figured out how to continue trading with one another even though they didn't have Swiss francs. They basically created this circle and created this credit clearing process. Now in the United States, about 40 years ago, some entrepreneurs set up a similar kind of thing as for-profit businesses, providing this credit clearing service. So in that period, we've seen tremendous growth in this industry. There are all kinds of trade exchanges, sometimes called barter exchanges, in operation in local communities around the country. And they have two national associations for this industry. One is called the International Reciprocal Trade Association, IRTA, and the other is called National Trade Association. And these are the trade exchanges, industrial associations. So they have done things like government relations and helping the trade exchange operators to negotiate the legal minefield, as you might consider the tax implications of these exchanges.
Okay, let me go to the callers because we're losing your phone again. Let me go to Jim in Kansas. Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Thomas Greco.
The sixth edition of Black's Law Dictionary has a whole column, half a page of definitions of different kinds of notes. So which I wonder where Billy Joe was looking when he couldn't find a definition of a note, but I realize that the Federal Reserve accounting unit dollar is a fraud.
Uh-huh. That'll be interesting, and I think he's not able to listen today, so I'll pass this on to him. Any other comments that you'd like to make, Jim?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the phone call. I appreciate that. Another Jim in Kansas. Unbelievable. Jim in Kansas. After this 1 minute, 10-second break, we'll be right back, and you'll be the first up. We're talking to Thomas Greco, Jr., The End of Money and the Future of Civilization is the name of the book. You can get it at Amazon.com or Chelsea Green. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for supporting the Power Hour. We're talking to Thomas Greco, Jr., The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. Where are we headed? Well, I think it's going to be a whole different system of money. And we've got a couple of callers that want to talk to you. Let's go to Jim in Kansas. Jim, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Mr. Greco.
Okay. The difference in a note can be seen very easily if you'll compare a silver certificate to a present note in your pocket. The silver certificate has the four requirements of a note. A note is a promise to pay. So you must have who is paid, who is to be paid, the amount, and the due date. And the silver certificate has all four of those things. It's written right on there, like payable to the bearer on demand. You know, there's your who's going to be paid and when. Well, the present note, the one in your pocket, has only one of those four. It's missing the other three. So you go back to the Black's Law, and it says a Federal Reserve note is a form of currency issued by the Federal Reserve Bank, and that fits the design of the bill in your pocket, okay, in the likeness of a note payable to bearer on demand, in the likeness of it. Well, why is it in the likeness? Because it doesn't have but one of the four things. It's a fraud.
Interesting.
Now, if you take this back another step, where is the real note then? It is the one you sign when you borrow the car, borrow to buy a car, or borrow to buy a house, or the government borrows, or corporations borrow. When anybody signs a note, they're promising to pay. And believe me, that note will have all four of those things on there. Who's to pay, who's to be paid, when it's going to be paid back, and the amount. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the real note. So the person who borrows creates the money. In other words, the bank is authorized to create the money once he has someone sign a note and promising his future labor to pay that note off.
So
the whole system...
Well, that's what I was saying earlier.
The payment of labor.
Mm-hmm.
Banks now create money on the basis of other assets. Your note to the bank is an asset to the bank, and the deposit that they make to your account is a liability to the bank.
Exactly.
So that's the way credit money is created. Now, it's tempting to want to go back to the old days of having gold and silver as the substance of money, but we don't need to do that. We need to be forward-looking. We need to perfect credit money and decentralize it and get it out of the hands of the money monopoly. Ultimately, goods and services pay for other goods and services. Money is just an intermediary device that's supposed to facilitate that process. Now, we can use commodities like gold and silver as that intermediary device, or we can simply use our own credit, which is abundant and unlimited in supply. The amount of credit that we can create is limited only by the productivity of the people who are trading with one another. So we need to be forward-looking and not discard credit money, but use credit money in a way that allows us to control it in our communities at the local level. You know, we used to have...
Look at our problem today.
What's that?
I'm sorry?
Look at our problem today. Nobody's buying the new cars, right? Nobody is signing the notes for them. Therefore, the new money does not exist for those cars.
Well, that's right.
For it to exist, somebody has to sign a note. So the government comes in and says, hey, we'll give you $1,500 or $2,000 for that old car, you know? In other words, they're trying to get you to sign a note.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can people sign a note when they're in debt $20,000 on their credit card?
That's
and
the problem.
$200,000 on their house, and et cetera, et cetera.
That's the problem with the debt money system. You're right.
That's our problem today. Nobody can create any new money by signing a note. That's their problem.
So we need to transcend this flawed banking and money system.
So what do they have to do? They had to create the money by themselves and just stick it in the bank. And that's what they did.
We've got break. We've got a three-minute break. Thank you very much, Jim, for the phone call. You guys are right on. Understand this totally. But we need to move into bartering. Now, Mr. Greco, do you want to stay with us a little bit into the discussion, in the next hour discussion?
Sure.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Okay, great. We'll have you back on. We'll be back, and we're going to take Rick from New Hampshire, so don't go anywhere, Rick. We'll be right back with our next guest, Annette Rick. Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Thank you for joining us today. We're talking about the subject of money again because it's so important we understand money is not what you think it is. Thomas Greco Jr. has been our guest in the last hour. The End of Money and the Future of Civilization is the name of the book. You can get it at Amazon.com or probably any bookstore. And let me go to Rick in New Hampshire before we get to our next guest, Annette Riggs, because she's going to come on with the understanding of what bartering is all about. Let's go to Rick in New Hampshire. Go ahead, please, Rick.
Good morning, Joyce. This
morning.
This is a fascinating discussion. Everybody's got their Black's Law dictionaries out. When I first heard When I first heard you say they couldn't find the definition of a note, I'm like, what are you talking about? I have the fourth edition and the sixth edition open to the definition of note.
Right,
now,
and we already got that from the previous callers, yes, so I thank you for that.
An important thing to know is in the fourth edition, there is a reference to at least five court cases where this definition of a note was challenged. In the sixth edition, okay, we don't have a reference to any of those cases. All we have is a reference to two of the provisions of the UCC. Okay?
Interesting.
Now, the American Historical Association, according to Professor Anthony Sutton, basically took control of controlling the writing of books for academia going back to the late 1800s. And, of course, this was going hand-in-hand and morphed into the U.S. Department of Education. And we can be pretty certain that it has certainly deeply infiltrated the legal profession and legal education. Now, I have before me also a December 1999 edition of Media Bypass. You probably know that magazine. It was a great magazine in its day.
Certainly, yes.
And the great Tupper Saucy had one of his supporters chasing around the president of the American Historical Association at that time, Professor William McNeil of the University of Chicago, just to find out if Dr. McNeil understood the magic words of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, no state shall coin money, emit bills of credit, and make anything but gold or silver tender in payment of debt.
Okay, we're running out of time because we need to go to our next guest, but any other point you want to make?
Just let me give you this one great quote in an accompanying article, because the whole issue was about the money wars. Whenever government workers begin to be paid by something other than what the people produce, the roles of master and servant become reversed.
Ooh, very good. Very good. Thank you so much, Rick from New Hampshire. Appreciate the phone call. Boy, I tell you, this is not like a normal program. People don't sit there with their Black's Law dictionary by the radio while they're listening to most programs. I bet
that's
they don't
great.
When they listen to Sean Hannity, that's for sure. Anyway, thank you for joining us in the Power Hour today. We're going to go to our next guest. Now, we're going to keep Mr. Greco on the line here because he has a super interest in the subject of bartering, as he has written so well about and so eloquently in his book, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. But I want to go to our next guest because Annette Riggs joins us today. She is very much involved in the subject of bartering with an organization called Community Connect Trade Association. Community Connect Trade Association. The website is communityconnecttrade.com. They're an association of professionals and business owners who trade their products and services for things they need. We decrease our expenses, increase our sales, and increase our net profits by doing business with each other. Thank you so much, Annette Riggs, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Hi, Joyce. Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tom really recommended you very highly to be on the program with him. And this is a subject that a lot of people know absolutely nothing about. So if you're starting out with people that know absolutely nothing, how do you introduce your subject of a trade association like this?
Well, I think Tom gave some introduction to the industry, which I'll add a little bit to, and you've been introducing it as bartering, and so that might be a good place to start. I've been in the field of non-cash exchange systems, trade exchanges they're called, barter systems they've been called. I tend to stay away from the word barter because most people think of barter as swapping.
Mm-hmm.
They think of it as I have something and you have something and we're going to trade with each other. It's one, and that is the more accurate division or definition of barter, is a one-to-one or swapping kind of mechanism. Well, as Tom mentioned earlier, about 40 years ago, a man named Mac McConnell, in fact, was the first person to conceive of the barter trade exchange concept, which was a way to use your products and services to earn credits, which are a type of currency, to purchase and use those credits to purchase the things that they need within the exchange. So, for example, if I'm a printer and I'm a member of Community Connect Trade Association or any other trade association, and I provide my printing services to the other members of the exchange, if it's normally a $100 sale for business cards or whatever, or a $1,000 sale for printing brochures, whatever the dollar amount is, that's what I invoice the trade exchange member for, and the trade credits get moved from their account into my account. So it's a non-cash banking system, really. It's an accounting. We handle all the accounting, the movement of debits and credits on behalf of the members. We're a third-party record keeper.
Wow.
That is our definition, you know, really by the IRS as of 1982, in fact, that we are a third-party record keeper.
And I can see, I can see so many questions coming out of this, because this is a unique style of doing business. Now, is it that the only difference here, are you telling us, the only difference is the mechanism of keeping records of this?
The difference between that us and cash or barter? Or
yeah, right, that and cash. Is it just simply...
Well, as you've been talking about, we're really creating money. We're creating a new way to exchange services and products that are outside of the money system. So for our local economy, for example, as has been talked about, we have a very limited amount of U.S. dollars right now. The credit is contracted, and there's really not enough money in our local economy and most local economies to facilitate the amount of exchange that individuals and businesses would like to do. They have capacity. The printer still wants business, but businesses have less and less cash to pay for that printing. So in our system, it doesn't require that cash. The business goes in and say it's a restaurant that needs menus printed, and they have the printer print those menus, and they pay them in trade credits instead of dollars. So we're literally bringing forward another form of exchange, or you could say currency. It is definitely a currency, because when the printer earns those credits, the credits go into their account. They can now spend them anywhere else within the coalition, within the membership, or within the association. And I'm giving you more than one word because people reference the groups in different ways. But in our case, we reference it as an association. So they can spend it anywhere in that association. So the currency is liquid within this closed network economy, within, in Tom's words, this particular clearing circle. That currency is liquid within that circle. So it's not liquid like a dollar, where it's liquid everywhere, and that's its limitation. And so all of these systems, in terms of how effective they are, how valuable they are to the community or to the business, really ties into how liquid they are as one important part of the story anyway.
Then let me go back to Thomas Greco Jr., and you've defined it very well for us. Thomas, is this what you had in mind when you talk about the future of civilization or the future of money in civilization? Is this what you are recommending in your book?
Exactly. The commercial barter exchanges, or commercial trade exchanges as they're properly called, are one aspect of this movement away from cash and away from the banking system. It's a complementary system for managing trade amongst productive members of the economy. And so it's a way of gaining some independence from the limitations of the money and banking system, which, as I've pointed out, are highly dysfunctional. So we have to begin to build these other mechanisms as the old system continues to decay.
Now, let me go back to you, Annette Riggs. The whole issue of this, doing a community trading system like this, the purpose is not to try and evade paying the IRS. If people owe the IRS, then they would still owe under this system, correct?
That's right. And that wasn't true when these first emerged, but I was actually very young and just starting in this field when those new regulations came into effect. So this was in the early 80s. It was actually in 1982 that the IRS came in, and they saw that this practice was becoming large enough that they didn't want it off their radar screen anymore. There were enough communities or businesses and organizations that were involved. And so they basically said, well, the practice is legal. There's nothing illegal about it, but it is taxable income. So they regulated that it is taxable income. That's when trade exchanges became legally established as third-party record keepers like a bank or a brokerage firm. And so the trade exchange is required to record all transactions, really, and there's on magnetic tape and so forth. And it's by 1099B form is reports to the IRS and to the members all of their sales. So it is really treated by the IRS just like cash.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't want to get off on the issue. All of you with your Black's Law Dictionary ready to pull it out again. I don't want to deal with the issue of taxable income right now because I know what you're going to say. We won't even deal with that because we're talking about a trade organization for bartering, or essentially for dealing in items and commodities. We'll be right back after this 4-minute break with our guests. Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Thank you for joining us today. We're still talking to our guest from the previous hour, the author of End of Money and Future of Civilization, Thomas Greco, Jr. You can go to his website. He's got several of them. Just click on today's guest at thepowerhour.com. And also, we're talking this hour with Annette Riggs. She's been involved in the subject of community trade organizations for about 20 years. Now, Annette, I just want to ask you, what was it 20 years ago that got you interested in this subject? Because that wasn't exactly something that everybody graduated from high school or college and went into bartering. I mean, that was a really unique subject then.
Well, it was actually fairly accidental. But I did want to, just before I go into that, just on the IRS tax issue, I just wanted to finish the other side of that story, because on the one hand, yes, it's taxable income from the perspective of the IRS, but it is also treated like any other transaction. So it goes into your gross revenues. It's not flagged, and your expenses go in the same way. So if you use your trade credits or trade dollars to purchase business things for your business, like advertising or printing or those kinds of things, they're expensed just like cash too. So I want businesses out there to know that it's not all bad.
Okay, I had one off-air question about the IRS, and that was, when these regulations came along, and I know this sounds like a really straightforward assertive question, but when the IRS got involved in the issue of bartering, why did everybody just comply with that, with those regulations?
Well, they didn't want to. There was a lot of pushback, in fact. But at the end of the day, it was a decision about whether they were going to be able to continue on doing what they were doing or they were going to get shut down. And in fact, many of them did get shut down because one of the things the IRS did at that time is they went back and charged income tax to some of these trade exchange operators who were running on trade exchanges, had very little cash. Back in those days, they weren't charging cash fees. They were charging in their own currencies. And so they couldn't afford to pay those taxes. And actually, a lot of people went bankrupt. They sold off their trade exchange to other people or handed them over to other people because they could not get through the situation they were in at that time. You know, like all of a sudden, a friend of mine, in fact, who is how I got into this industry, so I'll bring that as part of the story, he was hit with like $250,000 tax bill. Well, he didn't have anywhere near that kind of money. So it actually put a lot of people went out of business, but then a lot of others emerged and new organizations that were better financed, actually, and could make the conversion because it required computerization and automation that was rare at that time or pretty non-existent at that kind time. So in some respects, it was actually when the industry or the field of barter and trade exchanges evolved, because they then became more efficient. They came in with new technologies and easier ways and more efficient ways of administering the systems and transactions, because they were now required to do all that reporting. And it actually drew in a lot of businesses that would not have participated because they were afraid of being involved in, you know, kind of a quote-unquote underground economy. Well, it was no longer underground. And today it is not underground. It's a mainstream business practice. And, you know, 500,000 businesses are members of, it's estimated about 600 commercial and corporate barter companies, and doing somewhere between $9 and $11 billion in annual trade volume. So
that's
it's no
amazing.
Longer an underground economy, and that's the positive side of all of that.
Just one question on your friend who could not pay the $250,000 to the IRS. What was the outcome of the situation?
Well, here's how I got into the industry. I was a college student, and I met a friend of mine in a class. Her and her husband owned a company in San Diego called Barter Systems, which was one of the first large franchised trading systems. They were all across the United States, did huge amounts of trade, and were prolific in the late 70s and early 80s. Those individual franchises, there was a lot of, you know, lack of understanding on the parts of the people that owned these franchises or were operating these exchanges about what they were really doing, that they were actually operating a microeconomy. And so they kind of went in blind in terms of all the issues of deficit spending and how you can ruin a currency by not understanding what you're doing, and that this is really a little economy and you are dealing with a currency. There just wasn't really that consciousness about it then. It was a new type of business.
Okay, we got to go to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us today on the Power Hour and supporting the Power Hour. Remember what we always say, vote with your dollars. Well, you can do that in commercial trade organizations. You can do that in bartering. You can do that with the Power Hour, and we encourage you to support the Power Hour. We're talking about the end of money, the future of civilization, which Thomas Greco Jr. and our other guest today believe is Rita believes is absolutely going to be in the area of how we do business with money. And joining us today, and you can go to their websites at thepowerhour.com. Go to check out the websites for Thomas Greco and Annette Riggs. And we're going to continue this discussion and take your phone calls on the subject of bartering. Now, I'm going to go back to Thomas Greco Jr. because I want to know, Mr. Greco, is there anything that you see that is a hindrance in the future from what you say in your book about the future of civilization, is there anything that in the program of the commercial bartering or commercial trading that's going to be going on that would not work? I mean, is this a feasible solution that Annette Riggs is presenting to us?
Absolutely. It's an implementation of the process that I've been referring to as credit clearing. And as I said earlier, we have two currents in that movement. We have the commercial trade exchanges, which Annette represents, and we also have a number of grassroots efforts, systems like LETS, Local Exchange Trading System, that have been popping up all over the world for the past 25 years. So it's the implementation of this credit clearing process that allows people to survive without cash, to create basically their own exchange media in their own local communities. So this is the way that we have to go, I think, if we're going to regain our power in our local communities and be able to subsist as this global financial system melts down.
All right, let's open up the phone lines. If you have any questions about bartering, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, if you'd like to talk to Thomas about this or Annette Riggs. And there's also another website I want you to check out, which is Barter, I think it's Barter News.
Barternews.com?
Yeah, barternews.com. There is a magazine on bartering out there also. And while we're waiting for your phone calls at 800-259-9231, Annette, I come to you. I tell you, okay, I've got a radio show. I'd like to get involved in bartering. What are you going to ask me, or what are you going to want to know from me, or what should I know from you as to whether or not I want to get involved in the system?
Two things. One, I would want to know about your show and your audience, just like any potential advertiser would, so that I could know how to promote your show and the sponsorship opportunities for our members so that you would have a way to earn those trade credits. And then the second thing I would want to know is where are you spending money so that we could identify opportunities of how we could conserve your cash and allow you to use those trade credits to purchase things you need instead of cash.
Good point. Where are we spending money so that it could be a reciprocal situation? Now, it's interesting because we don't take any sponsors at the Power Hour because, except for those commercials that you hear on the breaks, those are all for the network. We don't take any commercials here because I want to know that the products that I promote, like I was doing earlier, when I voice those, that's because we promote those and we believe in those, but we will not take any money for sponsorship. So we're unique in radio shows because I don't want anyone to control us, and I don't
right.
want anyone to tell us what we can say. Now, let's say somebody else comes to you and they've got an auto body shop or some mm-hmm. service they offer. What would you be asking them?
That's what I would be asking them. You know, it's just whatever type of business it is. If it's an auto body shop or an auto repair shop, I would be finding out what kinds of services they provide. We need to know quite a lot about any of the members of our association because, like, how your understanding of silver and clay allows you to speak to people and provide them with information to promote those products that you believe in. Well, we're very much in the same situation where we want to feel good about offering the services of the members that we have, so we need to know and understand what they do. Well, different auto repair and body shops, they have different areas of specialty and all that kind of thing, so we need to know all of that. And then we also want to know how we can help that business thrive, whether it's a terrible economy or a good economy. There's always value in this process for a small business because small businesses particularly are always under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So we would, again, want to know where we can help them conserve cash and use the credits that they're getting from the new business we're bringing from them to spend on the things that they need rather than using their scarce cash to buy those things. So it's a conservation tool.
Well, I am just amazed at what you're doing here and that you're so well organized and have been doing this for so long. That's so impressive. Now, what kinds of businesses are most attracted to your organization? Or in other words, what type of, do you have services more than products? Or how would you distinguish as to who does business most with your organization?
Well, in the local business clearing circles, and there is another segment of the barter industry, which is corporate trade that services large companies that I've also been engaged in. But on the local level, it really ranges anywhere from accounting, legal, anything you can imagine a business needs. That's what we do. We do tend to be skewed to service. When we get into products or auto repair, everybody has a cost. I mean, they providing the parts to repair the car and all of those things. But when you get into like a retail atmosphere, say a grocery store where the margins are very, very small and their inventory replacement costs are very, very high, it's more challenging because they have to have the cash to replace that inventory. And so the limitation of this field right now does have a lot to do with how tied into the cash economy a particular company is, or the exchange itself and its ability to dig into the supply chain. So the more that I can provide a business, the more inventory replacement or the more purchases we can convert to trade purchases, the more they can then use our currency. So okay, those two things have to be balanced closely.
Okay, very interesting. We are loaded with phone calls right now. So let me go to Chris in New Mexico. Chris, you're on the air with our guest Annette Riggs and Thomas Greco Jr. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Joyce.
Hi there.
Good morning, Annette. Something you said at the bottom of the hour kind of gave me pause, and that was that I think the gist of what you said was that the trade association kind of becomes for all intents and purposes, a kind of a miniature version of the Federal Reserve. Can you address that further? And, Joyce, where's Josh?
Oh, Josh is in the next room. Unfortunately, we've got a glitch in the phone lines. You know, we got hit by that, whatever it was that we got hit by. And so he is unable to be on the air with me at the same time. And I know we miss him horribly. I miss him, too. And he's running around trying to get the ISDN line fixed right now is what he's doing. So that's the answer as to where Josh is.
Okay.
Now, back to the Federal Reserve issue. Let me go to Mr. Greco first, because he may want to address this first about the fact that it sounds like a miniature Federal Reserve. Do you understand that, Thomas Greco?
Well, it's an odd comparison. You know, there's a big difference between the Federal Reserve and a local credit clearing association. The enormity of the Federal Reserve and the power that it has is just amazing in comparison. So there may be similar processes, yes. But
well, my concern was that you know, Annette mentioned, you know, that you started getting into inflation and you know, all the things that go along with this.
This
currency.
Okay, I understand. Yes, there have been many problems within the commercial barter industry, commercial trade exchange industry, and many exchanges have not been properly managed, and most of those have gone out of business. Because they ultimately defeat themselves by abusing their internal currency. See, that's the thing about the free market. If you have choices, people are going to choose the ones that work best for them.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris from New Mexico. And, yes, Josh will be back, I promise you. Wayne in Missouri. Wayne, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Wayne, you're on with our guest today, Thomas Greco and Annette Riggs. Go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah, listening to this to me sounds like as you guys grow and get bigger and bigger and become interconnected with all the other networks in the other communities, I think it's just kind of helping the government turn us into a cashless society. And when you get, if this continues to expand, the government will just come in and take you all over and say, thanks for your help. And I'll get off the air and listen to your comments.
Whoa, what an interesting comment, Wayne. What? Oh, my goodness. Your response to that, Annette?
Certainly there are people that have talked about that in the context of what happens if this actually becomes a really significant part of the economy. What kind of government response could there be? And I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that. But, this ties in. I did want to say something to the previous caller in terms of the Federal Reserve. I do understand that concern and share it because I've seen over many years a lot of systems really abuse their power, so to speak. And I think the next evolution in this sector is a complete different level of transparency. And so one of the things that we do is most businesses don't want to be involved in policy of the exchange, quite frankly. They have their own businesses to run. But, you know, we really put in practice a transparency where anyone can see what's going on. We plan, you know, more community governance and boards that oversee and are part of looking at the currency and all of that.
Let me go to our final caller, Jim in Minnesota. Thank you very much, Wayne, for that out-of-the-cage phone call. That was interesting. Jim in Minnesota, go ahead, please.
How is the accounting managed with the trade credits locally and internationally? Is it dependent on the Internet system?
Yes, most. It's not dependent on the Internet, but most systems have, they're computerized. It can be web-based. It doesn't have to be. I mean, when we were first doing this, it was all ledger and through manual accounting. It has definitely moved more towards automation. So how we account for it is the selling member may call in to the office to get an authorization, which just means they're verifying that the buyer has the credits in their account, and then we do the transfer, or they can go online and do that transfer automatically. There's, you know, systems emerging now that allow you to do that through the existing POS terminals through a swipe card.
Okay. I want to thank you both for being on the program today. This has been an amazing discussion. Thomas Greco, Jr. and Annette Riggs, thank you so much for joining us. Please go to their websites. Check out those websites at thepowerhour.com. And the book, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization, it's available at Amazon.com or Chelsea Green. I want to thank you both. This has been most enlightening. I think we need to continue this discussion and perhaps even into the area of just strictly bartering also. But thank you all for joining us on the Power Hour today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
It's been excellent. What articulate guests. They really know their subject.